This week on the show, we're talking to Jason Kirk about the WSOP, the intern, she's getting coffee, I answer your viewer mail, and I also give you my picks for UFC 162. Let's begin. Welcome back off the board, CalvinAir.com Sports and Sports Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Beatty. This week we're going to talk about poker. Is it a sport? I don't think so, but ESPN plays a lot of it on their show, and a lot of people like it. I like it. Not as big a fan as the guy we're going to have on, Jason Kirk, but before we do that, let's read some viewer mail. All right, guys, you want to write the show, email us, offtheboard@calvinair.com. Follow me on Twitter, it's at Mr. Bill. Like our Facebook page and subscribe on iTunes. Then you can take the podcast wherever you go. First one from Luis. Is Aaron Hernandez guilty? I don't want to prejudge, but all signs point to yes. If he didn't kill the guy, he probably knows who did, and he's mixed up in some shit. It's such a pain. It's sad to see a guy, you know, he just signed that $40 million contract. He's one of the biggest stars on one of the best, most popular teams in the league, and he probably threw his life away over some bullshit. Who knows? But there's a guy dead, and all signs point to Hernandez. Looks like it's Tebow time in New England. All right. That's from Pat. What happened to the Bruins in five? I was wrong, Pat. Chicago Blackhawks, they killed it. They come on strong those last few games, and hell of a team. They were the best team all year, and they deserve to win. So, all right, let's look at UFC 162. All right, guys, you know I love the fights, so huge event this weekend, UFC 162, main event, Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman. Let's go through the fights on the main card here. First one, the Mark Filipino Wrecking Machine Munoz is taking on Tim the Barbarian Bosch. Mark Munoz, he had a rough spot. He got knocked out and destroyed by Chris Weidman. Went through depression, gained a ton of weight. I don't know if you've seen the pictures online. He got up big. He looked pretty rough, but now he's down to his fighting weight. Looks ripped. Still, I don't know if his head's all there. You know, he's a small favorite here, but I'm going to go with Tim Bosch on this one. I don't think Munoz's head is all the way there. Next fight, we got Cub Swanson and Dennis Seaver. Seaver's a guy, he's got incredible striking, but he just doesn't, he's up, he's down, you know, he's made a couple weight switches. You know, Cub Swanson's a big favorite here. I'm a little leery because Cub Swanson's he puts it together, and then something in his head, I don't know, he loses it, but I'm going to go with Swanson here. Go with the favorite. All right. Next one here. This guy's one of my favorites. I'm glad to see he's made it in the UFC. It's Roger Gracie from the, obviously, legendary Gracie family. One of the best jiu-jitsu fighters in the world. He's small underdog against Tim Kennedy. If you read the news this week, Tim Kennedy was talking about fighter pay is shit. Dana White admonished him, so he's going to have some extra motivation, but I don't see him getting past Gracie here. I know Gracie's the underdog, but Gracie's going to make a hell of a debut. Next one, Frankie Edgar is taking on Charles Oliveira. This seems like a mismatch right out of the gate. The odds makers think it's a mismatch. Edgar is about -550. I don't usually like to put money on this much chalk, but Yeah, if you're gonna make a pick, Edgar is the obvious choice here. The main event, Anderson Silva, Chris, the All-American Weidman. This is interesting. I'm having trouble trying to figure this out. Like, on paper, Weidman looks like the guy that's going to give Anderson Silva trouble. He's got better wrestling than Chael Sonnen. He's got good stand-up. He's undefeated. He looks like the guy to end the streak. But at the same time, it's Anderson Silva, the Spider. He hasn't lost in 7 years. He's the best fighter we've ever seen. I'm having trouble trying to figure out if Weidman's really stands a chance here, or if a lot of this is just hype to sell the pay-per-view. And I know I'm going to buy it, but I can't bet against Silva. It's I think it's going to be Weidman come out, look impressive in that first round, and then Silva figure it out, turn on that switch, and I'm thinking second round TKO. So Anderson Silva, the legend continues. Let's talk to Jason Kirk and talk some WSOP. Jason, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've had you on for hockey, and I figured now it's get you on for something you really know about, poker.
There you go. Yeah, I pretend like I know about hockey.
So, actually, describe being at, I've never been to Vegas during the WSOP. I know a ton of people go, even if they're not playing poker. What's the experience like when you're down there?
It's bigger than you would expect that it would be. You know, you see it on TV, and obviously the main event's the big thing that most people pay attention to, and the crowds are huge for the main event. But what's really amazing is that you've got 7.5 weeks of poker going on, and usually 3 or 4 tournaments a day in the Amazon room, and they've expanded past that even now to take up other rooms in the Rio. But the crowds are thick the entire time, 7.5 weeks, and in one sense, you kind of think, where do all these people get all this money? Because they're not all that good at poker, you know. Some people just come out for the experience or whatever. But on the other hand, it's just really cool to see that it's a worldwide game that people everywhere love to play, and everybody has a dream of winning a bracelet, and they will come and stay the whole time trying to win one.
Wow. Well, actually, you mentioned the worldwide game. I'm taking a little bit of Canadian pride here. That's Canada Day just happened. The Canadians are kicking ass.
They are. It's this year they've won more bracelets than any non-U.S. country has ever won at the World Series in all its history. And the really cool thing, I think, is that it's not your guys that everybody knows of from, you know, the past years, the online poker boom, all that, who have been winning. It's these young guys. They come in, they play online, they maybe play a little bit live, and it's home game kind of thing. And they're the ones who are winning the bracelets. It's a lot like the U.S. used to be during the poker boom, where you have all these young guys who get to play, they're on the forums, they know each other, they kind of go back and forth on things. And so I kind of think Canada's sort of supplanting the U.S., that this is sort of like the beginning of a wave, because we don't have online the way that we used to. And they still have it in places like Canada, and I think that they're really benefiting from that.
All right. Well, actually, you mentioned, you know, online poker, you can play anywhere in Canada, play pretty much anywhere in the world except for your home country.
The land of the free.
which is making it a little difficult. But you see, actually, a lot of the American players, a lot of the American pros are somewhat worth their salt. They're going elsewhere to play.
Yeah, that's right. After Black Friday came, a lot of these guys didn't move right away, but there's some services that have come about, and little communities of players have come about. And so you got these guys that are moving to Costa Rica. You got guys that are moving to, you know, Toronto or Vancouver, places where they can still commute back to the U.S. when they need to, but they sort of make it home. And they've been having a lot of success. I think that, you know, look at a guy like a guy I know really well is Matt Stout. All in at 420. You know, he's been playing for a long time. He's an online guy, and he came in second place. He's been playing at the series for years, and so to see him do that, it's like, okay, well, some of these guys who are traveling and living abroad to play, they're showing just how important online is. Regardless of what the U.S. wants to think about it, those guys they've got the chops, and it shows.
Actually, what do you think of I think Nolan Dalla mentioned that poker players should boycott the Venetian.
You know, the thing is, the Venetian is a great place to play poker. But when you get the ownership coming down and saying online poker is a cancer, it's going to destroy society, all these kind of things, why wouldn't you boycott them? You know, I think that that one of the most important things you can do, you know, whether it's poker or really any kind of business, is that you vote with your wallet. And if this guy basically says you're all a bunch of parasites and you do no good for society, then why would you want to give your money to a guy like that? I say the boycott's a good idea, and even if it doesn't necessarily go for a long time, just to make the point that, you know, poker players carry a lot of money with them and they spend a lot of money, and if you want us to spend that money with you, you'd better treat us with some respect.
Yeah, fair enough. That's I think he's just a grumpy old man, and he's protecting his land-based
market. I think he's got a lot of things to worry about, and he's trying to distract. You know, there's talking about looking into Macau and how he got his connections there to get the casinos set up and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's a lot easier to say, oh, look at these online poker players, they're dangerous. And, well, what about the guy with $20 billion who's funding presidential candidates? You know, I think that guy's a lot more dangerous than an online poker player.
Well, and that's the thing. It's, you know, you see the PPA, they're talking a lot about backing these Republicans who want to support online poker. But when the Republican Party's number one donor says no online poker, it's going to be a little tough for them. So,
oh yeah, and I think that when it comes to all that sort of thing, with any luck, the party will wake up and realize, you know, there's a lot of people that donate a lot of money, and sure, Sheldon's got deep pockets, but he's also very vindictive. He's also very arbitrary about things. And do you really want to rely on a guy like that? I wouldn't want to. But then again, maybe that's why I'm not in politics.
But again, when he's donating $20 million here and there, it's you kind of listen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Back to the WSOP. We're seeing a couple of repeat, like we're seeing some repeat winners.
Yeah. And to me, the most amazing thing is that several of these repeat winners are former Player of the Year winners. Like Tom Schneider is the one that immediately comes to mind. He was the Player of the Year back 07, I guess it was. He won a couple of mixed game events back then, and then this hadn't made any more bracelet wins or big final tables or anything in the years since. But then this year, won both of the horse events that were on the schedule. And I remember talking to Tom and interviewing him, you know, a couple times back when he won years back. And he's just he's a high stakes cash game player down in Arizona, and so the WSOP is just a thing that he goes and plays in the summer, but he's not a major tournament player. So I think when you see a guy like that who comes back and wins two bracelets for the second time in his career when he's not really a tournament player, it really sort of bolsters that argument of poker being a skill game. It says that if you're going to win two bracelets, yeah, anybody can win one or two, let's say. But if you're going to win four, you really have to know what you're doing, and you're really taking on top competition. And I think it just shows, how much skill there really is involved in the game.
You mentioned that Player of the Year race. It's getting close.
It is. The column that I wrote for you last week talked about the Player of the Year race, and there's I don't want to mention who it was because he deleted his tweet, and he's sort of in the middle of everything, so I don't want to call him out because obviously he deleted it.
Call him out.
Thought what he was saying. I'm not going to do that. But what he said was that, you know, oh, this Player of the Year race, you know, Dan Kelly had a bunch of caches real early this year, and he's like, with him and Tom Schneider being behind Daniel Negreanu, who won the WSOP APAC.
Your favorite.
That they shouldn't be behind him, that we've got a broken system, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, this Player of the Year system, I think it's the best it's ever been. It takes into account buy-in level. It takes into account field size. And it takes into account where you finish. And you get more points for a win than you do for anything else. But second place still counts for 70% of a win. So it's taking all these different things into account. And what you're seeing right now, Daniel Negreanu is still on the top, but David Baker has actually stormed back to within 1 point of him, because Baker's hasn't won a bracelet this summer, but he's had three or four final tables, and one of them was a second place finish. And so I think that what you see is that that it shows that, yeah, even if you don't win, if you're consistently performing, this this formula takes that into account. Chris Klodnicki is another guy who hasn't won a bracelet this summer, but he's had a couple of second place finishes, and he's in fifth place right now. And then Tom Schneider with his two bracelets, he's just about 30 points back in Nugranu right now. And mostly that's because the buy-ins were smaller for his tournaments and the fields were not as big as they needed to be to offset that. So I think that when you look at that, that it tells you that the formula is working, because all these players who have different ways of succeeding are all being recognized as being up at the top. And I think the other big thing is that this year that all the WSOP Europe events are going to count, all the WSOP APEC account, and then obviously in Vegas. And that wasn't always the case. So even when we're done with Vegas, you know, even when all the events are out of the way, we've still got Europe to wait on, and we've still got the November 9 to wait on. So I think that they've really done a good job of fine-tuning the system and making it something that's really worth following.
Well, and WSOP APEC, that's why Negreanu's winning, leading right now.
Right.
He had that strong performance in Australia, so.
Yeah, and he also had a fourth place finish down there. It wasn't just the main event win. So so that final table, and then I want to say he may have added another one since then, but he had five caches in Vegas. None of them been final tables, but several of them been pretty deep runs to where he was within, you know, one table or so of getting there. So it's not like he just won the one event and is coasting off of that. He's definitely playing his game the way he needs to try and become the second or the first player to win more than one Player of the Year title at the WSOP.
All right. Well, we've the main event's on coming up real soon.
Yeah.
Real quick. I know it's kind of hard to make predictions when you're dealing with 6,000 players, 7,000 players, but I'm going to ask you to do just that. That's
okay. Well, sure. Why not? I mean, we're just going to throw stuff at the board anyway. So I tell you who the guy I would say to watch for is Mike Mattisow this year. Not necessarily saying he'll win, but Mike's made the WCP main event final table two times in the past. He clearly knows what it takes to get there, what it takes to make it through these big tournaments. And he won a bracelet earlier this summer, and you know, he also won the National Heads Up Championship this year. He won the Florida State Championship last year. He's a guy who was unfortunately ripped off by Ross Hamilton with all the Ultimate Bet scandal. Everybody knows about that story. His confidence was shaken, and a guy like Mike, I mean, it's all about reading people. It's all about, you know, understanding his opponents, and when without that confidence, it really killed his game. But now he's fully recovered from that, and I always thought he was one of the most dangerous players in the world in any tournament he was in, you know, back in the heyday. And so to see him kind of come back, I think is really cool. And I've seen him, you know, on the floor, you know, run deep in that tournament before. And when he's in the zone, there's hardly anybody that can touch him. So I'm looking for a big performance from him this year.
Cool. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about the Phils.
Well, you know, neither one of them's really done a whole lot this year, which is a bit unusual. Usually if Ivy and Helmuth are there, they're doing something. Now, obviously Helmuth has had two really, really big years back-to-back at the WSOP, so you can't really knock him. He's got 13 bracelets. He clearly knows what he's doing at the tables. But Ivy, you know, he's been putting together this Team Ivy. It seems like he's got some things kind of going on aside from the tables. And honestly, I have to say he's probably so busy with cash games that once he won that ninth bracelet earlier this year, the cash games kind of take more precedence. But you know, they're both dangerous players, and when it comes to the main event, everyone wants to win that one. And I think that if you're a guy with a reputation like an Ivy or a Helmuth, it means even more to you. And so you can never count a guy like that out when it comes to the main event.
Actually, looking at it, with these guys, you know, Doyle Brunson tweeted out his stack of chips, I think, you know, $250,000 on the table, and he's just like, this is why I'm not playing tournaments. How many of the bigger players, the more notable players, are just foregoing tournaments, or they don't put as much time into the tournaments just because cash games are that much more profitable for them?
Well, I think the younger you are, probably the less likely you are to focus on cash games, because the bracelet means a lot more today, you know, than it did, say, when Brunson was in his real heyday, you know, back in the 70s and 80s. That bracelet carries a lot more than just the money that comes along with it. It's a reputation maker. And so I think the younger guys tend to still want to put as much time in with the tournaments as they can. But the older guys, you know, if they've already got a bunch of bracelets under their belt, and the prospect of sitting through a $1,500 tournament and wading through 3,000 or 4,000 players to maybe get to where you might make as much as you'd win in one pot in a cash game, I think it's a little bit less of a draw for especially a guy like Doyle. It's completely understandable why he would rather focus on those cash games. And you know, what he said when he originally said he wasn't going to play at the series this year was that his strength has always been just outlasting the competition. And in a tournament, you can outlast the competition and not win much. Whereas in a cash game, if you wait until those guys get tired and they start making mistakes, that's where you really clean up. And so I think that a guy like that who's already made his reputation, if Doyle never cashes again, nobody's going to say, oh, that guy's no good. Everybody already knows him. He's already done what he needs to do to have that rep. So I think cash games are obviously a lot more appealing to a guy like that. But if you're in your 20s, maybe your early 30s, and you haven't got all those bracelets yet, it's a lot more appealing.
Awesome. Good stuff, my friend. The time is almost upon us, so we have to wrap this up.
Let's do it.
All right, but any other predictions? Anybody else? You're just going with Mike Matusow for the main event?
Mike's the main one I've got my eye on. But I think that when you look at these guys who are on the Player of the Year leaderboard, I think those are the other guys to really pay attention to. Dan Kelly, I mentioned before, had a bunch of cashes real early on at the series. He's still 10th in the Player of the Year rankings right now, even though he hasn't come close to winning a bracelet. I think 5th was his best finish. But when you cash 10 or 11 times in one series, it shows that you're clearly in a zone. You're clearly playing your best game. And so I think a young guy like him who's got as much stamina as he has is going to stand a really good chance of doing well. And also, he's won millions of dollars playing online tournaments against big fields. So I'd keep my eye on Dan Kelly. And a couple of these guys who've won some bracelets recently, too. I think Anthony Gregg, you know, he was Greg Merson's backer last year when Merson won the main event. And then Anthony comes through and wins the one drop. So even if he's not playing all the time, he's clearly got game. And he clearly knows how to pick a winner. And so if he's feeling it, he could be really dangerous, too.
Excellent. All right, you're on Twitter now, finally.
I am.
Can you tell people where they can find you on Twitter?
Yeah, it's Music City Writer on Twitter. And I'm on Google Plus. You can follow me on there. Just look up Jason Kirk and look for any poker stuff and you'll find me. And I do the columns for you every week. I do the Dealer's Choice column on Friday for CalvinAir.com. And I do the Tuesday Redwire column at After Party.
Excellent. Thank you, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. That was Jason Kirk. Always informative. That's the end of another show. I want to thank Jason Kirk for being on the show. Thank the intern for doing what she does. And yeah. Email the show, offtheboardcalvinair.com. Follow me on Twitter, it's at Mr. Bill. Like our Facebook page and subscribe on iTunes, and you can take the show wherever you go. Have a great rest of your day, and may all your bets be winners.